It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show. It's the Ag Watcher Show.
You're here with Matthew Dalgleish and Andrew Whitelaw of the Ag Watchers podcast. Welcome back.
See, I thought that's a good way of doing it, Matt. You know, that's add an element of professionalism to the podcast.
And always, I think maybe we forget that, you know, it could be the first time someone tuning in and they don't know who they're listening to. So we should remind them every now and then who it is.
Yeah, but most of the time they're not listening to us anyway. They're listening to the guest, and then the guest introduces himself.
Well, but we don't have a guest today, unfortunately, listeners. Just us. Just two of us. Yes, and our new music again as well.
With new music.
We had to engage a professional singer, of course.
People don't realise like how much time it takes to put this podcast together, all the effort that we go through, all the planning.
That's a lot of work.
All Sunday I just spent from sort of maybe 7:30 in the morning till 1:30. Just planning out the week's podcast and just planning out a script and what to talk about. And
that's why, difficult. I mean, all that planning that goes into it's one of the reasons why we have discussed the idea of having advertising, but it, you know, to be able to add the extra workload of all the advertising.
Well, I listen to podcasts, a lot of podcasts. Do you know me, Matt? I've traveled a bit.
Yep.
And I like to listen to podcasts while I'm at the gym, you know, working out. And, One of the podcasts that we actually have been on a few times, I think.
In the early days.
I think we're on 90 episodes of it, actually. And I listened to one of their adverts the other day, which was for a grout company.
Bathroom renovations, or was it just like fixing up your grout? Fixing up your grout?
I think it was Grout Central or Grout. Yeah. Grout Guard, that was it. Yeah. I thought it was interesting, yeah. I think
was it an Australian accent or American accent, or was it an Australian ad?
Australian ad, yeah.
But
it's an interesting one. Like, I still think we're better off not having sponsors and just keeping it a fun hobby podcast and not trying to make money off of it, you know, just giving out entertainment and shit podcasts for everyone to listen to for nothing. So,
yeah. So maybe
somebody will buy us a pint one day, or a non-alcoholic beverage. Because you can't talk about pints these days.
We have been blessed with quality apparel from the Merino Polo and also from TX. I wore that TX shirt again last week. You got a different pattern to me, but they're quite a handy shirt. Plus, every time I've worn it now, people have recognised the shirt and said, "Oh, that's one of the. This is a conversation starter thing." Mm. So it's been a lead into mental health, which
this is riveting, you know, for the listeners, isn't it? Matt's clothing sales.
Well, just saying that we have received things of value. You know, and also don't forget Pacton Park, right? The team there have always been very generous.
I believe that the value in doing the podcast is getting to talk to so many great people and learning from them. There you go. See, I'm not a material person, Matt, anyway.
No, that's true. But you are more fashionable than me, so.
That's just natural. I'm European, so.
No, Scotland part of Europe. Now that I thought Brexit meant that you're no longer part of Europe.
That's on the continent of Europe, not the. I didn't say the European Union.
Mm. All right, let's get into it. What's going on? And you can start. I'm going to start with livestock. You can start with what the glorious wheat and other associated broadacre markets that you look at.
You mean the glorious grains?
There's the collapsing pricing of international markets.
Look, they actually. End of last week, they just were going under a bit of pressure, and I'm not going to say how many years the lows were, but recent year lows they hit last week. So if we're looking at CBOT wheat, last week we're sort of hitting around about that sort of mid 3 teens, so like 317 to 315 mark. It's really interesting because it's a pretty low level, but then we're back up to 329 as of this morning, so another fairly big jump. So a lot of the losses have been regained. But I think if you look at the actual overall picture of it, there's just this sort of sizable Russian crop coming on the market. And so that grain in Russia, the wheat, has declined in price fairly substantially. And we've seen that flowing through to things like Matif wheat, which is, French wheat. But also it flows through to the rest of the world at that point because Russia has a significant stockpile of grain, and that's coming onto the market in leaps and bounds. I had a lot of people talking about this protest in Europe. A lot of Polish and Hungarians are protesting
You mean
against,
not the farmer protests, but the people protesting the grain coming through and
well,
cheapening the.
the farmer protests.
Well, they are, but not the farmer ones that were the other ones.
Well, it's all part of the same sort of thing. But anyway, they're protesting about cheap Ukrainian grain coming across the border. And but the reality is, I feel that that is a bit of a furphy to ban that grain from flowing across the border. Because let's say they ban it and they say, right, Ukrainian grain can't come into Europe. Well, all that's going to do is mean that the stockpile is going to build and build and build. And then at some point in the future, it'll come on the market.
It'll eventually come,
Unless that war continues forever, and, which is a possibility.
It's going to get interesting if Trump gets back in and the money that the Americans are currently sending across and the aid they're sending across to Ukraine ceases, then it's just left to Europe to help them out. It's going to get tricky.
Other than that, in grains, I think the main things to watch out for at the moment are definitely that the fact this is the boring time of the year. Nothing really happens. We've got the Northern Hemisphere will come off and go out of hibernation end of March, start of April, and then we'll start to get more insights into what's happening for Canadian canola crops, happening for US crops, European crops, and that's what will drive the market for the next 12 months. But at the moment, nothing really massive to talk about. I really think it's interesting that, again, I always go back to the psychology of markets and that view of the new norm. Now, we hear it all the time. Like, how many times have we said that?
One of your favorite phrases, the new norm.
Well, I just think it's one of the most naive things to say in any market. And generally, when we hear that new norm, it tends to be just at the height when it's going to crash. And I think that's the issue we've got is farmers in Australia have been stuck with these, not stuck, that's probably the wrong word, experienced and benefited from pretty high prices in recent years, coinciding with pretty good production. And now we're starting to see that, probably that cream is coming off the top a bit. And so we still got relatively high input costs, but the price of grain is losing a bit of its luster, I guess. But I think, again, it's only March. And I think that's an important thing is that people get caught up about what the price is just now and they start, squealing about it. But the reality is that it's nearly another 8 months until harvest. And so I don't really think it's something that needs to be really too concerned about at the moment. And that's also why I say, I think I wrote an article a few weeks ago, all the agronomists that say we should plant this because the price is good for barley or the price is good for oats or the price is good for lupins or whatever it may be, changes every year. It's nonsense. The reality is that the price of wheat, canola, barley doesn't really have any relation at seeding to harvest. So just plant what is going to work agronomically and what you're going to get good yields from, I guess.
And
But
with regards to some of the volatility, you're saying that the global volatility builds as we head towards the middle of the year, but you're saying now's the quiet time. When does it start to pick up? Is it kind of like, June-ish or whatever, when that.
I said 2 minutes ago, Matt, I said end of March, early April is when things start to get interesting and start to pick up. But if you weren't listening, Matt, how would we expect all the listeners to listen? It's very ignorant. But no, I think if you look historically, the invasion of Ukraine kind of messed up like the averages. But if you take out that March,
That was a February spike.
February, March spike in volatility, which just was such a big spike in volatility that it threw everything out. But really, if you look at it from like a long term, like a proper, true long term point of view, basically June, July, August, and July being the sort of the peak volatility and the peak uncertainty around what's happening around the world. So you see a little event happen in July, it tends to see a big reaction in the marketplace, which is why sometimes there can be good opportunities in the middle of the year for Australian producers.
It's an interesting one you spoke about when you mentioned again that new norm, because just this week or last week it was, I updated the deflated pricing for livestock, for cattle and sheep and stuff, and put some articles out on it. And every time I do it, it always surprises me just how we do revert. We're pretty much close to being back to the long-term average pricing again after that sell-off we saw last year for livestock. It's back to long-term average pricing. And we know a lot of the investment funds we speak to, they often focus on the deflated long-term averages, like a reversion back to the long-term normal situation, rather than, when we're going through the peaks in pricing a few years back and everyone was saying, oh, this is the new norm, this is, never going to go back again. But here we are back at the long-term deflated average price yet again. And it just surprised me that it continues to, when you see these big or the swings in markets one way or another, how quickly people can just forget historic reversion back to the long-term mean.
That's economic terms, yeah. I want to ask you a question because you're the one with an economics degree. You're the smart economist. I don't know anything about markets. I just read the scripts that you give me. But I got a phone call the other day from someone who was at a presentation down in Western Vic, and they got told something along the lines of, it doesn't matter how much you could add. No matter how much wool or sheep meat you add onto the market, that supply will be eaten away, and there's no impact.
Yeah, that's not true. Well, we saw that
Well,
last.
that's what I was. My first view was that, basic 101, supply and demand economics would tell you that it's not necessarily true. Like if you had supply into the market, that pulls price down.
Well, we saw that last year when there was too much supply at a certain time and processing domestic was overwhelmed. I think if you're talking about the general view of growth in demand for something like sheep meat, there's obviously stronger, the prospects for growth globally are stronger than potentially where the supply sits right now. But that doesn't mean, like, if price starts to behave in a.
I think the actual term was that Australia cannot oversupply its ag commodity markets, including sheep meat and wool.
Well, but what happens if, like, New Zealand for the last, say, 15 years have been reducing the size of their flock? They've only had a handful of times when breeding new numbers went up and a handful of times where their lamb crop was larger. And they've been focused more towards dairy and beef and increasingly forestry recently. So if the price starts to climb and it encourages New Zealanders back
Well, I
into the
think
game.
all I'm saying is you can oversupply any
Yeah, of course you
market.
can. Of course you can. Of course you can. To say something can never happen is, when it comes to those type of, cycles is a little bit foolish, I would think.
Anyway, they're experts, we're not.
Yeah.
So what else is happening in the cattle market? What is the price doing for cattle and sheep? Because actually, funnily enough, I was in a.
Well, you're saying that we saw a recovery from those lows of last year. And so through January, prices had recovered somewhat. But February, we saw pricing for both sheep, lamb, and livestock, cattle all coming off a little bit. And what was driving that was extra supply. The yardings had been quite strong through the first 3 weeks of Feb. And so that kind of impacted pricing just there, just because the volumes were coming through. So, which is the normal scenario.
It's just, yeah, it just seems like a lack of knowledge of S&D. One of the questions I actually had is I was actually talking to a bloke. Funnily enough, I was in Paddy Paling's, the camping store, and the guy started talking to me. Turns out he was a farmer from, must be relatively near Canberra, and he was talking about how he was pretty happy now with sheep pricing. He did, it was interesting, the conversation. He did say he was talking about like the price of merino polo shirts and merino shirts from Icebreaker,
Oh, they're cost prohibitive.
and they're like, God, I get paid bugger all for bloody my wool, and look at the price of these. I should get a freebie. But anyway, he was obviously a bit despondent with the price of sheep last year, but he said he's pretty happy with the way it's going now.
I'd noticed there was an article just yesterday out from John Francis from Agrista, who we've had on the podcast ages back, just saying that he thought there'd be a bit of a bloodbath in sheep markets if the price of sheep don't or lambs don't get back up to double digits, up into the $11, $12 a kilo carcass weight, which is a fair way off. I know we've recovered somewhat, but we're still a good $5 or so away from those levels. And he was suggesting margins from his analysis. He did a lot of on-farm margin analysis for livestock producers, and he thinks that there needs to be much more money being paid to producers, particularly of sheep. Even given the recovery in prices from now, which I was surprised to see.
What would be required to get it back to $11?
The export markets are booming, right? And we've had some
export
of
markets are booming because it's cheap.
Well, yeah, but even with the recovery in pricing to where we're at now, which are those back to those longer term type averages, so we're pretty much at average pricing right now, give or take, 50 cents or so. It'd take a bit of a kick up to and a bit more. Restocking activity would be, you need to see the restockers getting really, really geared up again, and to see, slaughter and turn off reducing significantly. And we're not seeing that just yet. We're looking like most of the stats are showing that whether it's herd or sheep, that we're heading towards liquidation rather than rebuild again. And without the rebuild and that real kind of grass fever activity, I can't see us getting to those stratospheric price levels. I think we'll get there again in the future, but we haven't, we dodged a bit of a bullet with regards to the dry spell, right? Remember how there was all that concern around El Nino and the dry and part of what pushed pricing down last year, but the dry never, it's been dry now, but it's not a drought, and we haven't had one yet in a number of years. So if there's a drought in 2025 or 2026, which could be the case, that that's not going to encourage pricing to get to stratospheric levels, is it?
Yeah, I think you need a pretty. At the moment, it's still cost of living is a big pressure, and not just in Australia. Definitely not just Australia. Pretty worse elsewhere.
Mm.
So buyers for $11 a kilo are going to be pretty few and far between. I think we could easily oversupply the market of sheep at $11.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I just, it was interesting sort of just hearing somebody sort of talking, he's pretty happy with the pricing compared to where it had been.
Well, because for a while there, I think it was below cost of production. So, and I think I'm not an expert on that side of the game, and John Francis is. But my understanding is cost of production currently, I know it varies as well, but average cost of production I thought was around that kind of $5, $6 mark carcass weight. So, we're above that for lambs at least. Maybe that's what your farmer was saying, that at least he's making a bit of money again now. But to go to $11, $10, $11, $12, that's you're talking pretty robust margins again then.
It's a bit like with canola. We sort of got maybe not used to it, but we expected, or a lot of people expected, not me, $1,000 a ton plus to be the new norm.
Mm.
And there was analysts out there that had a number of reasons for why it should be that, which I was not necessarily convinced on. Mm. I think $1,000 a ton canola is achievable in the future, like you say, but not in the current market, not in the current environment. I think if we get bigger pushes towards more biofuels, especially aviation biofuels, then yeah, maybe we do get to sort of those higher levels. But at the moment, it doesn't point to that. Markets don't just take, if you look at the long-term average prior to that jump with a Canadian drought, that's called $600 a ton. Then it jumped up to 1,000 plus per ton. It's kind of about 40% rise in pricing in 1 year. That's not what I call, that's a supply-driven shock. That's not the new norm. That's just and that's what we see with a lot of things just jumping through the roof.
There are some analysts out there. I did see one specifically a few weeks back that put out his forecast out to the end of the decade for livestock, and he was very bullish. And I don't know how, particularly in the Australian context, when you're talking about how much the dry and the wet influence and that shift between restocking and destocking, how that can shift pricing. We've seen that in the last few cycles, right? How much it can change. To go and forecast so boldly to say, demand's through the roof globally for meat proteins, the US is struggling.
Who's going to remember that in 2030?
Well, I'm just saying we haven't had a drought, right? We haven't had a drought since 2019, and that was significant in New South Wales.
I'd go as far to say, putting a forecast out for an agricultural commodity for 2030 or 2040 is much easier than putting a forecast out for 2024, 2025, 2026. Much easier.
Partially because
long-term forecasts are BS anyway.
Yep.
But the other thing as well is that you're looking at more bigger term macro swings as opposed to the micro swings that you can get in a commodity market.
Well, as you know, we've got pretty good livestock modeling, but it's only as good as the inputs, right? And the biggest variable that can influence the pricing that is hard to predict is the amount of rainfall we're going to get, particularly in Australia, right? So that's what I say. You tell me what the rainfall is going to be each year, and I'll tell you what the price will be, because most of the other inputs are much easier to predict in terms of supply and demand, right? They're kind of less chaotic, whereas rainfall patterns in Australia, the Bureau can hardly forecast out 3 months in advance, let alone 3 years.
Well, I don't blame them for that. The last thing I wanted to mention was something I saw in the news this morning. I think it's actually a voluntary thing. I only sort of glanced at the sort of article, but about putting video cameras in meatworks.
Abattoirs. Yeah, yeah.
I think that is by the industry voluntarily doing that. Is that right?
AMEC announced it, and all AMEC processes are expected to do it by, I think, 2026. But it was in conjunction. I think there was some negotiations undertaken with RSPCA and AMEC, and I guess it's showing a progressive approach there. So we're comfortable in what we're doing and looking after animals in the right way as they go through that process, and happy to put these things in. So I think that's a good getting on the front foot, really, isn't it?
Well, I think it's good. I think it sort of sets a scene of industry responsibility. And they've got nothing to be ashamed of, because we do keep seeing footage. Like, we saw that footage that was pretty horrific, or very horrific, out of Tasmania. That was, what was it, Tasmanian, I can't remember what the name of the company is, but that was pretty horrific. It was pretty small meatworks. And then you had the one in a pig farm that came out yesterday. So that was horrific images. But I think, if you've got nothing to hide, you just put it in there. Because at the end of the day, the animal rights activists are going to put their cameras in. Better that abattoirs and meatworks have their own cameras on 24/7.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad thing for security either.
Well, no, and to lead the discussion rather than get dragged along by someone else's agenda.
I think the government was going to introduce that as a mandatory thing anyway. I know in Tasmania, looking at after that harrowing sort of incident in that we saw on ABC News with that small meatworks there, there was talk in Tasmania about making it mandatory to have video cameras there. I'm so curious if it means that they want to put them live streamed as well. I don't know if it's just recording and or if it is just a full. I think some in maybe the Netherlands make theirs completely open to the public. So maybe not. Maybe not.
But it is an interesting one. Like, you've outlined a couple of times where the wrong thing's been, collected on some kind of imagery and then put out there, and it makes the whole industry look bad. But it's the equivalent of there's plenty of people that have pets at home that are abusive pet owners, and when we hear those types that go through the court system or whatever, or you see on the RSPCA TV show or something, or someone doing the wrong thing, that's not all pet owners, and equally most of the industry players are doing all the right things, like we know.
100%, but that's no excuse.
No, not at all.
And I think the reality is that the industry has to get rid of bad actors.
Yeah, absolutely.
And cameras is one way. Let's be honest, if you, like, I know, Matt, that when I worked in an office with you, I could
walk... is this with the rise of AI, you'll say there's cameras in the office for abuse of PCs and phones?
When I used to come in the office and you'd be sitting there playing solitaire or whatever, if I had a camera above your desk, you'd be like, oh, fuck, I better actually do some work. So when I used to walk through and catch you out doing that and looking at websites you shouldn't be looking at, like football scores and stuff is what I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. it would catch out. So I think I'm not, I guess.
That's
I don't
why
want
to, I had to shift the desk around so that you can't see the screen from when you walk in. That was part of the readjustment of the room.
Yeah, quickly, Windows key and D.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. Again, I don't want to sound like I'm a bloody 1984 cameraman like Martin Murray with his cameras or his house. But
he's getting everything captured and
yeah,
collected.
But it does. It is a form of maybe not control, but it is a form of it keeps staff honest and it keeps staff doing the right thing. Because remember, it's not the owners of these abattoirs in most cases; it's staff. And this is a way of keeping a good track and control of staff. It's a bit like, I think, is it Taylor? Do you remember that experiment in business? Taylor. Let me just see if it was Taylor.
What was the premise of this one?
You keep talking. Oh, the Hawthorne. It was the Hawthorne effect.
Yeah.
Do you remember the Hawthorne effect?
No, what's that one? If people think they're being watched or something, they behave in a certain way, or
no. So what they did was this is a lesson
psychological,
lesson in psychology and workplace behavior. Mm-hmm. But basically, the Hawthorne effect was they had a factory, and they were experimenting on changing the lighting.
Right.
So back in those days, I think it was candles, maybe. If I'm right.
Oh, so back when I was at school. You know?
Back when you were in school, 1970s. Mm-hmm. 50s, sorry. So they changed the lightning, and the idea was to be able to see if factory staff were more productive or less productive.
With different variations in the lighting levels. Right.
But what they found was it didn't actually change all that much between increasing lighting or decreasing lighting.
Mm.
What happened was they acted more productively when they felt they were being watched.
So if the lighting was higher, they felt they were being watched.
And if the lighting was lower, they knew it was somebody there testing it. But it was basically, so it's an interesting story because we covered it in uni in my undergraduate quite a lot.
Mm.
But basically it just says that if workers will modify their behavior if they think that they're being watched.
I wonder how that plays out now with a lot of workers working from home these days since COVID.
I thought
productivity went up because you're not wasting a lot of time traveling, talking to people around the water cooler.
But you can still track people. You can probably track your staff more now than you've ever been able to, with everything transitioning to Teams and whatever else and keyboard notifications and whatever else. So, but anyway, that is a lesson in the Hawthorne effect, very basic lesson, but it provides if your staff are getting watched, they will have a short-term productivity boost. So there you go. Maybe these cameras will also not only reduce the amount of animal welfare issues, but it might increase the productivity of the staff.
Because
they won't be standing there bloody talking or whatever. They'll be, get to bloody work, son and boy. Girl.
That's true. That's true. It reminds me of a story that my grandmother used to tell up in, she came from far north Queensland, and it was on a cattle station of sorts, and they had kind of workers there at the time that were not necessarily back in those, I'm talking, because I'm very old, as you already outlined, and so my grandmother would be even older. So you're going back to the, probably early 1900s or something. And there was an overseer at the station that had a glass eye. And so when he'd leave from wherever they were doing their work on the property, he'd take his glass eye out and put it on the fence post and tell the workers that he was still watching them to keep them working, apparently. I don't know if that's just an urban myth or not, but that was a story my grandmother said.
All right.
Similar concept.
Similar concept. But they basically, again, it's coming when the subjects of an experiment or study change or improve their behavior because it has been evaluated or studied. So,
there you go. All right.
So people think this podcast is just having a laugh and messing around. But I reckon a lot of people will never have heard of the Hawthorne effect.
Oh, there'll be people Googling it as we speak.
But next week, maybe we should bring a new teaching to each podcast.
Should we make
this an educational podcast. Next week, I'm going to talk about what we're going to talk about.
Well, maybe we can ask the audience to just give us some feedback. A, should we have some adverts for things like grout and kitchen repairs
kitchen
and
repairs
bathroom and renovations? Or also, should
we're,
we have
not,
a
we're
little...
not, we're not getting sponsors because we're too cool for that. Like, we're too underground, you know.
But
we're,
some of the some
too,
of the
we're too edgy, you know.
Some of the listeners might like to have the first minute of the podcast be taken up by some random ad for something that's not agricultural at all.
Possibly.
Some people might like that, just in case you're planning a kitchen renovation or something. And the other thing is, we can ask them: should we put in some more educational pieces? You know, Andrew's. We could call it a little segment: Andrew's educational. I don't know, inputs. We'll have to work on the phrasing of it. Before we go, is that, you know, you've mentioned a few times with Auntie Julie's gift to us that has to be in Canberra at a restaurant in Canberra.
Yeah.
Is there a time frame at which I need to get up to Canberra to partake in this, or is there?
I will double check on that.
Does the voucher? Because I would hate to think that Auntie Julie's generosity, you know, doesn't get acknowledged properly by me making the time to go up and
look. If worse comes to worse, yeah,
mm.
I will go
and eat for the two of us.
Eat for the two of us, and I'll put the tap.
See if George can attend.
See if George can attend. that's an in joke just for Matt and I.
Yeah.
George likes to drink too much.
He does. He does.
I'll put the tablet in front of me and we can talk to each other. Zoom. We'll get, you know, you can make a steak at home and I'll have a steak at the restaurant, or two steaks at the restaurant, and then we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fair enough.
Sounds good. Right. This is getting silly. We're trying to run a professional podcast here, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've been listening to
that's what I don't understand yet. Like a podcast, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Like you get to the end of a podcast. And then so you've been listening to Andrew and Matt for the last, 20 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it's been. Blah, 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 thanks for listening. It's like, well, if they've been listening to the podcast for 20 minutes, an hour, whatever it is, surely they know who they've been listening to. Or they just...
But you don't come into a podcast, you know, halfway through.
Or they just go into a coma and then wake up in the last minute of it and say, oh, cheesy peeps.
They might fall into a coma. They could have zoned out like I did earlier when I had to ask them the same question.
Anyway, if you like the podcast, leave a review, only a good one. If you don't leave a good one, well, we'll find out where you live.
Mm-hmm.
Blah, 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 blah. Remember to subscribe, share with your friends and family, yada, yada, yada.
See you when you got nothing on.
Ciao for now.